Welcome to Dessert Before Breakfast, the podcast where we review TV finales through the eyes of someone that's never watched the show. I'm Mike Dorval, and I have seen one episode of Fooly Cooly.
I'm Melanie Germain, and I've seen none of Fooly Cooly.
I'm special guest star Casey Poore, and I've seen all 18 episodes of Fooly Cooly.
Nice.
Wow.
So, Casey, nice to see you today.
You as well.
You're, of course, a champion sword fighter slash actor slash musician slash improviser slash podcaster.
You make me sound so much more interesting than I truly am.
You're also, this is relevant for our TV show podcast. You work on TV shows for TVs on TV shows.
Accurate, yes. I am the guy who runs all of the monitors and projectors and cell phones and tablets that you see on camera on a bunch of different TV shows.
Oh, rad. Sorry, I was genuinely interested in that. I'm just very tired.
That's okay.
That sounds really cool. I'm so sorry.
That's how most people react, so don't worry about it.
No, I'm genuinely interested. That sounds really cool. Oh, God.
Thank you. Yeah, it can be very fun. I've done a lot of cool stuff. I did the entire series of The 100. I did...
Oh, neat.
Yeah, I did Dirk Gently's Holistic Detective Agency.
Oh, nice. Love
Dirk Gently.
Thank
Love
you.
Dirk Gently.
I did... what else have I done that you might have heard of? I recently did a show called The Mysterious Benedict Society that's going to be on Disney Plus very shortly. Mm. I don't know why I'm plugging a Disney show, but here we are. What else did I do?
Lost in Space.
I did Lost in Space. I did season one and chunks of season two of Lost in Space.
Oh.
Those are kind of the biggest ones, I guess.
Cool.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And you also have a podcast.
That is correct. I have a podcast forthcoming that's called Tales from the Lost Galaxy. It's a live improvised sci-fi sitcom. So me and a bunch of people got together and we worked out all the characters and sort of the basic rules of a world. And then I would prompt a bunch of scenes. So I'd be like, Jerry and Max are sitting in the control room talking about how there's pirates in the ship. And then they would just do a scene and I would frantically take notes. And then at some point I would end the scene and then prompt a new one with different characters. And over the course of an hour, we'd build out like a Star Trek adventure kind of a thing.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was pretty fun. We did 20 episodes of it. So there's going to be a lot.
Nice. Cool. Nice.
Yeah. It gets super weird because I told them off the bat, I was like, unless you do something really offensive, I'm never going to rein you in. So at one point, a person is literally possessed by their sentient penis. It's a very strange
nice.
Show.
I love it.
Yeah. And you're, are you, do you also play characters? Or are you specifically the ringleader?
I played a couple in sort of like random characters throughout, but mostly I was just the ringleader because it got kind of confusing because my voice is just my voice most of the time. And when I had to panic and be like, what does this person sound like? It sounds like me. Yeah, so that should be fun. I hope people like it. I hope it's not something that I'm the only person who thought it was funny.
Where are you going to release it? Probably Apple, maybe Spotify.
Yeah, the classics.
Unless you want it to be like really niche or whatever.
I mean, ideally, I would like it to be as un-niche as possible so that they give me a whole bunch of money.
I think that's the goal, really. Un-niche is good.
Totally.
Yeah.
Looking forward to that.
Thank you.
Yeah, we'll put a link in the show notes. It should be out by the time we release, so.
I now have a deadline, which I'm very excited about. I need those. So what do you guys know about Fooly Cooly?
So I saw the first episode. It was a long time ago. I don't remember it very well. Melanie?
Me? It has a funky name. That's about all I know. I don't know if this is animated. I don't know if it's live action. I don't know if it's a play. I'm like, it could be anything to me right now. I have no idea. But love the name. I think you guys said it was an anthology series.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, that's a good thing to point out. Actually, this is an anthology series, and we're not watching the last released episode of the series.
No, which we'll get into later. We're watching the last episode of like classic Fooly Cooly.
Mm-hmm. Ah, yes. Yes. Classic Fooly Cooly. Is it ice cream? It could be ice cream to me.
All right, we're going to watch the final episode of the first season of Fooly Cooly. If you want to watch it along at home, it's available to stream on Funimation in Canada. and we'll be right back.
That's an anime!
All right, we're back. Melanie, what'd you think?
I don't know. I've been keeping it in while we did our little break, but I don't know what I just watched.
Yeah.
And I loved every second of it. Like, I'm just trying to piece everything together. And I don't even know if I want to go through a play-by-play because I don't even know if it's worth it. But I have questions immediately.
I'm so excited to answer them.
Yeah, so... like, I didn't really talk about this in the intro, but the thing that I know about the intro wasn't even, like, present or apparent in this episode, because I saw the intro and in the form of, like, a YouTube, either it was a full episode or a clip, and then I was like, that was weird, and then I never figured out what it was from or what it was for until, like, years later, and I was like, I should watch that someday. But basically, in the intro episode, the girl hits the guy in the head with, like, her guitar, and then he grows a giant horn.
He sure does, yes.
And that's the only thing I remember from the intro episode. But the horn doesn't even make an appearance.
Well, he had a thing. He had a patch covering his forehead, so I'm guessing that's what that must have been. And that's why... see, one of my questions was, why did that thing need to eat that kid to go into the hand? And now we know it's because of the horn thing. So that answers a question for me, actually. That clarifies a lot of stuff for me.
Kind of.
Kind of. Kind sort of. All right.
Kind of, sort of, but not really.
Yeah, I would say that I was expecting to be less in the dark than you, considering that I've seen the first episode of this, but really, I don't feel like I know anything, so I'm kind of in the same boat.
So, like, it's so... I really debated whether or not this was the right show for this podcast.
Yes, because absolutely. This is what we want.
Exactly. But I was always so confused because it's like, it's only six episodes, but so much happens in six episodes.
Yes. Yeah.
And it's like, so by the time you get to this, like, I have the answers to these questions and I'm so excited to discuss your thoughts. There's so much to talk about with it.
Oh my gosh. Okay. I want to start with the little stuff. Okay, first the little stuff. What the hell was that whole chopstick thing?
Yeah.
And do using chopsticks actually prevent Alzheimer's? Because
I also wonder that. That literally never comes up again. It's just like
it's just a bit that they do. Gotcha.
It's just a weird bit of slice of life that shows up here and there.
There's a lot of stuff about, like, brains.
Yes.
And ironing brains and remembering.
I'm getting
things
to that, Michael. I am starting with the small stuff. Okay, I have small questions first. Okay, there's the chopstick question. Second, are sporks actually better, in your opinion,
than chopsticks?
Than chopsticks?
Oh, definitely not. I have a fork, have a spoon, make a choice, but if you can have chopsticks, you should.
Okay, great. We're on the same page, Michael. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I
don't know if you can tell the passion in my voice right now, but there is a right answer here.
Yeah, I mean, like, I do like chopsticks, but not for, well, I guess I don't really like ramen. Like, I like chopsticks for sushi, but I don't really understand the ramen chopsticks thing.
You don't like ramen? Is it too delicious?
Yeah, is it too delicious, Michael? It's
too delicious, yeah.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not a big soup person.
All right.
I feel like this has come up before, because I remember being baffled by this before. How can you not be a soup person?
It's just the thing, and then there's water in it? I don't know.
It's not water, Michael. It is stock, and it is delicious, and it is flavorful, and it is amazing.
Mike feels soup is the spork of food. Be a drink, be a food, do not be both.
Yeah. Exactly, 100%.
Okay, what is with the eyebrow thing? Why did that guy have, like, nori eyebrows? And because why did he have give it to the kid? And
I don't know what you're talking about. Oh, I did not pick up on that in the episode.
The guy who was riding, like, the bicycle while they were talking about the brains and then, like, ironing out the wrinkles and everything, he had eyebrows that were made out of, like, nori, like the sushi, like the component, one of the components to make sushi.
He sure did, yes.
What is... Okay, can you give me more details,
like,
on what
seaweed.
That is? Oh, okay.
Just the texture of it. I was like, are his eyebrows nori?
They are.
And then the kid had it too. And then during the manga sequence, the kid lost them. And then his eyebrows were normal. And then he asked him about it later. So it must be relevant somehow.
So when they meet Commander Amaro, like, he only shows up in like the last two or three episodes. He has these eyebrows, and it's this thing for the longest time where people are like, what's with his eyebrows? What's going on there? And then you find out later that he doesn't actually have eyebrows, and he's very sensitive about it. And he thinks that if he has very robust eyebrows, people will take him very seriously indeed. And he gives now to Nori eyebrows because he's like, no, you want to be an adult and you want to be taken seriously? This is how you be taken seriously. And he gives him robust eyebrows.
That's amazing. I love that. That to make that like such a like a big thing, I guess not that big, I guess Mike didn't notice, but like it was, that was funny. That was a good bit.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, let's get a little bit more deep down now that we've covered some of my smaller questions.
Right.
What's with the hand and the giant iron?
Okay.
Yeah. I know that they talked about the whole like the wrinkles of the brain thing. So
what do you think they are?
So I think that there's a bit of a, like, there's a moment where they say something like, the iron is trying to iron out the brain. Isn't that a little much? Like, it felt like a very, well, it felt like something that someone would say about an anime. Like, it felt like almost a meta commentary of some kind. But that's as far as I got from it.
Yeah. So the iron is a factory that's owned by this company called Medical Mechanica that lives in this town. And every once in a while it shoots out steam and everyone's like, that's weird. A lot of people work there, but nobody really knows what they do.
Okay.
And then it turns out that it is literally a giant iron. And Medical Mechanica has a conspiracy that they're trying to enact to smooth out the wrinkles of planet Earth, which will eliminate all free thought. And they have been doing it across the galaxy to planets all over the place.
Okay. That's so on the nose.
It actually doesn't come up a ton.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So how does, but okay. So the ironing the planet, but
yes,
but they also said brains though.
Well, cause I think it's because like, isn't it the more wrinkled your brain is, it's like that's what helps thought? Because there are some animals I know that don't have many wrinkles and they're like the dumbest ones or something.
Something like that.
So I just think it's a really on the nose metaphor for like killing everybody.
So they're
ironing the, but where's the connection between ironing the planet and free thought? Or is there just not one?
There really isn't one, is sort of the punchline there. Right. There's actually, this would be a really good time to point out that in an interview years after this was made, somebody asked the director about a bunch of stuff to do with the show, because as you've seen, it's very weird. And he was like, it's important to know, I can't remember the direct quote, but he's like, it's important to know that comprehension isn't super important to enjoying FLCL.
Yeah.
So it's like the thing about like flattening out the brain and whatever isn't really like, that's not really the overarching point of the show. It kind of serves to like support the real story of the show, which is really the coming of age story of Naota and Mamimi, and to a lesser extent their friends, but mostly the two of them.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So meta commentary, is that there too, or maybe not?
Well, that whole manga sequence where afterwards they were like, okay, let's just stick with an anime now because that was really hard or something. Like, that was super meta.
Yeah, that's, they do that exact same gig almost line for line in the first episode.
That's, well, they talk about it, so.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Mm-hmm. That's funny.
Yeah.
All right. They mentioned at the beginning that people had vanished. Was that Haruha? What's her name? Haruha / Raharu?
Oh, Haruko? Yes.
Sure, one of those names.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Her and Conti had left. Conti is that green robot with the TV for a face.
Gotcha. Right. I was going to ask who Mike the TV was.
He's everyone's favorite appliance.
Yes, exactly. So was he the thing that like the brain shot out of him and then he became part of...
Yes.
So there was that little, what the hell they call it?
Oh, the terminal core.
The terminal core. That Mamimi, is that her name?
Yep.
That she was hanging out with and calling Naoto's, I guess, nickname or whatever.
Yeah.
Yup. Okay. So she was hanging out with that thing. And then I think she goes a little bit nutso.
A little
and
bit.
Then wants revenge on everybody. Do you think the terminal core had something to do with her going crazy? Or was that just always, like, was just that just a thing?
That's kind of like, so her, like, arc, she starts off before the show even begins. She was dating Naota's older brother. And his older brother moved to the States to play baseball because he's very good at baseball. And she was really depressed about it. And she kind of fixated on Naota. And then what happened after that? Oh, she found out that his brother had a new American girlfriend. And she kind of has like a bit of a breakdown about it.
Uh-huh. Right.
And then so her arc is kind of her struggling with that and causing problems and then fixing problems, and their friendship kind of, they circle around each other a lot.
Right.
So is her brother is the main character, or is a different character that we don't see?
He's a different character.
His brother is in America.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we never see
him. Never see him. Okay.
I think you see a picture of him at one point, but that's it.
Okay.
So while she, that for that scene where she was kind of just looking out into the water smoking.
Yeah.
And like clearly having lost her mind a little bit more, the kids were referring to her as Takon's wife.
Yeah, because she's like, I mean, she gets bullied a lot is part of her thing.
Okay.
And they hang out all the time because they're friends, right? And he likes her, mm-hmm. but he doesn't like her, and she does like him.
Okay. And him just like walking away. That kind of a dick move, right?
Yes.
Gotcha.
That is also sort of his thing, is that they're like, he's kind of an asshole. And the show is sort of him learning not to be an asshole.
Right.
And he often fails.
Gotcha.
Okay. And so she comes across this kind of robot-like thing, the core that you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And the animation in that sequence is really, really cool. I really like the whole, like, everything's very noodly and smooth. And, yeah. Like, it kind of reminded me of, like, Cowboy Bebop, to invoke another anime. Like,
honestly, it reminds me of Kill la Kill.
Oh, totally.
Mm-hmm. And, like, Toon Monsters from Yu-Gi-Oh!
That's awesome.
It's weirdly cartoony. You know, despite it being an anime, because anime has its own like, kind of style and stuff, but it's so like wiggly.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting. Mm-hmm.
That's kind of part of, I think, the stylistic fun of this show is that it does move its style around a lot. So like it starts off fairly straight ahead anime with just like its own kind of design. And then every once in a while, it just flat out changes animation style to accommodate a scene. There's a whole chunk of one episode that's done South Park style for no particular reason.
What year was this?
So this, the original FLCL series, was released in 2001. And then the next, like the quote unquote sequel pieces were done in 2018.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah.
And by different people.
Oof. Okay. Did you like them?
It's interesting. I really, after the fact, really liked the second one. While I was watching through it, I was like, I don't know what you're trying to say. And I don't 100% know what you want me to think about what you're trying to say. But then at the end, it comes together in this really nice way,
okay,
which I thought was really cool. And it takes it's thematically very similar to the first one, but it's, I think, a lot more mature in a lot of ways. It's really interesting. It's a whole conversation.
All right.
The third one I did not particularly like. It's really has nothing to do with anything. Nothing, like, you saw how wild this was, and nothing really all that wild happens in the third season. It's just like these four high school girls mostly just like living their high school life, and then every episode a robot shows up because that's what this series does, and then Haruko hits it with a guitar and it goes away,
right?
And then we go back to normal high school stuff, and you're like, that's not what.
Okay, so I think I did hear you mention that there was the protagonist kind of goes through every series. And I was going to ask if it was Haruko, but
it is now yes.
confirmed. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
So is her lasting mission to find Adamsk?
This is part of why the next pieces aren't considered to be as good, because she is in the second series, ostensibly, yes, she's still trying to find Adamsk, and it does end in a cool way that ties it all together, which is why it's kind of weird in the middle and then really great at the end, or it's part of why it's weird in the middle and really great at the end. And in the third season, she's just kind of there because, and it's like, why?
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So we were at...
I have some questions. I have questions about Adamsk.
Adamsk?
Adamsk.
Adamsk?
I think.
I thought they said Adamsk.
They might. Adamsk? I think they mix it up.
Oh, okay. They change it around. I like that. Yeah. So he's the pirate king, correct?
Yes.
And then there's... Is Medica... What is it? Medica?
Medical Mechanica?
Medical Mechanica?
Jesus.
So many nouns.
Is that also a character, or is that like a company?
It's really just a company. They're just kind of like over there being nebulously evil.
Gotcha. And then I wrote her name wrong once. And
Haruko? Now,
Haruko. They're aliens, right?
Yes.
Gotcha. Okay. But not medical botanica or whatever.
they may or may not be. It is honestly never comes up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whose fault is it that the clouds are preventing anybody from leaving this town?
That's Medical Mechanica.
Gotcha.
Okay. Because the smoke comes out of the factory. That particular cloud of smoke is from a fight that happens in episode 5 when they first release Adamsk.
Oh, Adamsk was released.
Sorry. They don't release Adamsk in episode 5. I misspoke.
Okay.
That's when the hand comes down from space.
Okay.
So that's not in the ground.
No.
That's a floating hand.
So let's play a game,
okay.
Because I think this will be super fun.
Okay.
How do you guys think the hand gets there, knowing that it doesn't come out of the ground? Like, where is the hand from?
Well,
you just say that it went to space. Yeah.
Came out of space.
But, like, is it an alien hand? Why is there a hand?
I feel like... So if the iron is medical botanical, then the hand is probably also medical botanical. Like, it's their sinister plot to pick up that iron that they were making and then like iron out the world or whatever. I'm putting my money on that.
They did say something to that effect in the episode, I believe.
You pretty well nailed the origin of the hand. It got to Earth because it was a satellite floating in space, and they were playing baseball, and Haruko hit a baseball so hard that it went into space and hit the satellite, which turned into the hand, and it started crashing towards Earth.
It turned into the hand.
Yes. And it started crashing towards Earth.
They don't build satellites that look like hands.
No, that'd be crazy. But it started crashing towards Earth, and Nauta had to save the day. And just before it got to Earth, it like threw a bomb shaped like a baseball at them. And then Nauta and Haruko had to hit it with a guitar so that it would fly away. And then the baseball went through the hand, and then the hand crashed to the ground.
And that's why there's a hole in the hand. And
that's why there's a hole in the hand.
The terminal has to go into the hole after eating the boy.
Correct, yes.
Oh, my
gotcha.
God.
No, it's all coming together. This is clear as day, Michael. What are you talking about?
It's consistent within its own logic.
It's like we have the meme of Charlie Day at the wall with all the string.
This happens, right? Okay, so Nori guy.
Yes.
The Nori, Captain Amaru?
Yeah.
Amaro? Yep. Hamaro, yep.
Eyebrows guy.
Eyebrows man.
Yes. He mentioned that Haruko...
Yeah.
Yes. And the Pirate King were in love?
Correct. Well, she's in love with him, yeah.
Oh, she's like a stalker. That makes makes way more sense in my mind.
The Pirate King is not Atomisk?
The Pirate King is Atomisk.
He is Atomisk.
Okay, yeah. Okay, got it. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's the giant bird.
Yeah.
Who was also a man at one point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why did they call him the Pirate King?
Because he's a space pirate, apparently.
Oh, okay.
But also a bird.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because he's really just a MacGuffin. Like, he really truly only exists so that Haruko wants something.
Has something. You know. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh. Okay.
Which kind of creates this cool line where, like, Naota is obviously wildly infatuated with Haruko, and Haruko is infatuated with this space bird pirate.
Yeah.
Yes. And then Mamimi is, like, in love with Naota as well.
Correct.
Gotta love that. It's like a four-part love triangle.
Love square.
Love square. That's the word. Okay.
It's kind of a little, I mean, like, I guess it's somewhat natural to be attracted to someone who is older than you. And I don't necessarily think there's anything problematic, at least in this episode, with her. She definitely takes advantage of it, but she certainly doesn't, you know, cross that line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's kind of the ongoing, like, that is truly what the show is about, really. It's not, like, the rest of the stuff is kind of meant to be, like, metaphorical stand-in for the experience of being somebody who's young and starting their puberty adventure and falls in love with somebody who's much older than them and obviously could not possibly reciprocate, kind of a thing, right? Mm-hmm. Sort of a semi-universal experience, I think, of, like, mm-hmm. becoming infatuated with somebody who's flatly unattainable mm-hmm. and probably not particularly healthy for you, right?
Right.
And then the sort of adventure of that person exploding into your life like a weird alien pirate and hitting you over the head with a guitar.
Yeah.
And then the craziness that follows, and then eventually them leaving to chase after someone who is equally as unknowable to you, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you having to kind of go on with your life as a normal human being.
Wow, that's really interesting. Nice.
What a great way to put that.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's kind of, I think that's part of what makes this show very interesting, right? Because, like, the storyline is mostly chaos and it's not truly meant to be comprehended in the way that you might try and comprehend, like, a comic book. It's more meant to be sort of thought about in a sense of, like, what does this mean? What is this moment sort of standing in for? How do you feel about this? Mm-hmm. Or how does this relate to your experience as a person?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's very moving in that respect. And I think the second series really nails that feeling as well, in a particularly interesting way, because the second series focuses on a female protagonist. And it does, I think, or speaking as somebody who didn't have that experience, I think it does a really good job of capturing sort of what that's like to some degree.
Interesting. I like that.
I wanted to take a sidestep to talk about the score. The score is absolutely phenomenal.
Oh, it's fantastic.
One of the coolest scores I've ever heard. Like a weird, like, punk rock / indie rock sort of aesthetic to it. That is just
that
sort of consistent. Yeah, throughout the entire episode.
Oh, damn, that was awesome.
Yeah.
I love it so much.
And it sort of connects thematically with them using guitars as weapons.
Yeah. So the entire score was done by a Japanese garage rock band called The Pillows, who have been around for a gazillion years. And I believe in season one, every piece of music is done by The Pillows in some level. They contribute songs to the other two series, but in FLCL Classic, it's all The Pillows all the time.
Neat. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So where were we? So we got the little core. He's a dude. He eats it up. He's big now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he gets big and then he merges with that Mike the TV. Mm-hmm. And then he merges again. He eats the little boy because Haruko basically hits him across the head with a guitar and chucks him into that body.
Yeah.
And he was just cool with that, I guess. Mm-hmm. That was a sign of love because he then, I guess the robot dog goes into the hand activates, goes for the iron, but then Mike the TV was standing there. And then Naoto emerged from Mike the TV's forehead with Adam's powers.
Correct.
And then he and Haruko fought for a while, and then he stops and declared his love for her. So, yeah, what a wild ride that was.
So it sounds like that's accurate. It doesn't sound like Casey has any objections to
I have
it.
No particular objections. That is definitely what happened. There's some, like, if you watch the five episodes leading up, there's some sort of, what's the word that I'm looking for? Where it matches something that happened before. I know that's a word.
That is a word.
Callbacks.
Callan, leave all of this in. Leave all of it. All of the thinking time in.
All the thinking time. Symmetry. There's symmetry.
Wait. Okay. Wait. Now we got to start again.
Oh,
let's say symmetry as though we came up with it immediately.
Oh, okay. Symmetry.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
Yeah. And very quickly. Suspiciously so, even.
We're so sharp. You are so sharp.
Oh, you as well.
Outstep.
Yeah, so there's some symmetry there in that Mike the TV, mm-hmm. Conti, is as he is known, originally emerged from Naota's forehead. In the first episode. Yeah. So the bulk of the series is Haruko hits him with the guitar. He develops this horn. And through the course of the first episode, he's trying to shove the horn back into his head, but it keeps getting bigger.
I feel like
and then eventually...
Don't just say that. That's not like the right way to do that. You could cut the horn. You could do other things to the horn.
So many options. But eventually, at the end of the episode, Conti, the robot, comes out of his head, followed by another giant hand, and they fight.
Oh, okay.
Wait, there was another giant hand?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But this one wasn't a satellite.
No, this one was just the hand of another giant robot who shows up in a later episode, also coming out of Naota's head.
Wow. This poor guy.
I wonder if it hurts.
It does, yes.
Okay, great.
You're like, I can't confirm this.
They do show that he is in immense pain.
It's a very universal human experience.
Well, you know, when a thing grows out of your head, it happens. We've all been there.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah, so... And to answer your previous question about him not being shook by being eaten, he's been eaten before.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And if it's happened once, you know,
right?
Whatever.
Right? The first time should be special. Everything after that is whatever.
Well, like, but shouldn't he be mad that she threw him into the robot dog?
Just kind of yeets him into this dog?
Yeah. And then to declare his love for her then was just... That isn't even the craziest part that happens, because after he declares his love and steals a kiss, he turns into Adamsk as the bird.
Well, he was Adamsk when he came out of Conti. He had his powers.
Okay.
Yes. But, he exploded into gigantic size.
Yeah, he like released...
He released more power. Adamsk. Not even his final form. He became a giant bird. And then the bird like absorbed the satellite hand.
Yes.
And left the iron.
Yes.
And then flew away into space.
That is all accurate. You nailed it. That's kind of...
That's it? That's... Okay.
Pretty much.
Yeah, so it's like you keep saying things to Casey thinking that he'll give you answers, and then Casey's like, no, you accurately...
Like, did I miss something? What does it mean? What's the metaphor, Casey?
Like, it sounds insane, and I'm like, it is insane. I don't know if there is, like, an underlying bit of symbolism in that piece in particular.
That's fair.
Yeah, that's mostly, like, I think, again, it kind of continues the... the sort of like train, the like love train they have going, right? Where it's like Haruko's been chasing Atomisk for all this time. She ostensibly has him, huzzah. And then he's like, okay, bye, and leaves.
Right.
And so similarly, she's like, oh, okay, bye, and leaves, leaving Naota behind, right?
Right.
Right.
But Naota is a normal person, so he has to be here.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. I like how he just left. He didn't like say anything or whatever. It was just like, bye.
No, he literally never does either. That's kind of like he's really depicted as being more of a force than anything.
Right.
Which I think is sort of, I mean, it doesn't really mean anything in the later seasons, which is part of the great flaw of the later stuff. Mm. But here in the first one, I think it's very intentional in the sense that, like, if Adams shows up and is doing things and saying things and has motivations, then it kind of undercuts the idea of him being this, like, unknowable something that it's like, well, maybe I could be more like Atomisk, and then you would love me. It's like, you cannot. He's a space bird, and he left.
Yeah. Yes. She did mention during the fight, though, that she wanted his power.
Yes.
To eat him?
Yes.
Is that part of the love thing, or is that just something else? Or did she think he was dead and wanted to like get his regain his powers or something? Or?
It's literally never explained.
Okay. Great.
It's like the medical mechanica people and Commander Amaro and whatever are all under the assumption that she's basically, yeah, gonna eat or absorb Atomisk and become like a space bird of her own, I guess.
Right.
And maybe become the queen of the pirates. But she never does. She references it. She talks about being in love with him, and it becomes an important plot device.
Right.
But she never actually... Does she absorb his power? Not truly. She does become... She does the laser ghost version thing at one point.
Good for her!
I mean, everyone needs to at some point.
So, do I have anything else for my... notes? I guess after that, things just get back to normal. But like,
there's a picture taken.
Mm-hmm. Here, let me talk about one little thing before we get to that picture. That little piece of sexual harassment in the car.
Yeah.
What was that for? Is that?
I don't know if that's for anything, to be honest with you, to establish that Amaro's not a good person that we like.
Gotcha.
And we do like Kitsurubami.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No. So it's just to establish some character flaws, I guess? Or
I guess so.
Is it to establish some character flaws, or is just anime be that way?
It's such an interesting question, because in this show in particular, like, the show is very deliberately sort of sexual in the way that anime can be, but I think in a way that I always feel like it actually wants to say something about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So like in that instance, Amaro does something gross, but in what I think is kind of a decidedly un-anime way, she's like, boundaries.
Right.
Right.
And then he's shitty about it again, but then he gets crushed by a hand shortly after.
Yes.
You know, and there's a lot of that kind of thing, I think, where it's like people will do or say shitty things like his dad and his grandpa in the manga scene, mm-hmm. but you're not, like, the whole point is that it's meant to make Naota feel uncomfortable and kind of, by extension, you, the audience, feel uncomfortable.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily, like, tee-hee-hee harassment. It's meant to be, like, aren't these people kind of fucked? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because it just, that one scene in particular was just, like, felt so out of place compared to what was everything else that was going on.
Yeah. And it's funny because I didn't remember that scene from my first watch through. And now watching it again, I was like, oh, that's kind of a through line. Like, not a huge one, but it comes up throughout the series.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Which is okay. Kind of interesting given how old the original version is anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was gross. Maybe uncomfortable. But anyways, let's keep going because the rest of it was pretty good. So yeah, Adams flies away as giant birds do. And Haruka is that her name?
Haruko?
Yep, that's it. I wrote it wrong one time.
It's okay.
And suddenly I can't get it. Haruko follows him and jokingly invites Naota and then says, nah, I'm just kidding, bye. And does she leave him that guitar, or was that guitar just there?
She leaves it behind, but she takes the guitar that he made. So you remember in the action scene?
Gotcha. We did not see them make that guitar.
Yeah.
You kind of did, because he does it when he becomes Atomisk. He pulls out, he has two guitars at one point. One of them is the Flying V that he was playing in his room, which he pulled out of space in a previous episode. And then the other one is Atomisk's guitar that he gets when he becomes Atomisk, and then he fuses them together into a double guitar. And she leaves with that.
So she takes the double guitar. Yeah, gotcha.
Right, okay.
And the one that he winds up with is hers.
You know what? In the hubbub, that was kind of lost on me.
That's entirely understandable.
There were so many things happening on screen. And, you know, that specific sequence was flashing a lot, which was very, like epilepsy warning almost, really.
Yeah.
It was great. So she took that guitar, but she left him one of her guitars.
Her only guitar. Specifically the one she hit him with in episode one.
Aw, wait. That's not an aw thing.
It's a little bit.
It's a little bit cute. Remember when I knocked you over the head with this? Wha-cha!
Yeah.
That's sweet. And then Mamimi takes a photo, mm-hmm. which was a really I really liked the way that shot came into play of her just like whipping this camera out of nowhere and then boom, taking a shot close up on her face and stuff, and then transitioning to the next scene.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. So cool. And then it says that she leaves because she can do better than Naota.
True facts.
And I guess the Adam's leaving and everything, and stopping the iron cleared up all of that smoke, so they were able to leave this town and things became normal again, except that there was Mike the TV living in that town.
Yes. He's a member of the family now.
Who's a member of the family. And then the very final shot is on the guitar, and then a note just plays.
Indeed.
What does it mean? What does it mean?
What does it mean?
Well, no, I'm asking. That's why you're here, Casey.
But this, for the longest time, no one knew what it meant.
Yeah.
For 18 years. And then maybe they still don't know what it means. I mean, I guess technically it's this character doesn't. Or no, he does continue, doesn't he? In the other
seasons. Naota doesn't. We never see him again.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
This is part of why. Yeah. This is part of why I suggested that we stick with the classic FLCL series, because that's very clearly the ending. And I think the implication is that the guitar plucks itself. Haruko might come back someday.
Mm.
And then she does eventually, but Naota's gone. She doesn't have that guitar anymore, so it doesn't mean anything. It retroactively has its meaning taken away by the continuation of the series.
Oh, that's kind of poopy.
Yeah.
A little bit, but then the guitar eventually shows up again. It doesn't make a ton of sense, but the show's not really supposed to make a ton of sense in that way, so it's kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I would say it's a little bit nonsensical.
Yeah.
Just a tiny little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, still very enjoyable. It was good.
Yeah, just another note about the credit sequence is also really, really cool too.
I know you left it on the whole time. I was figured that you enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, I was just like really jamming on the song. Yeah.
Were you air guitaring? Cause I was a little bit.
There was a moment that I don't think we covered where the guy is holding on to something and he's like, no, the folds, there's nothing to grab onto. I'm going to fall.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know what that was about.
He likes talking about wrinkles a lot. He literally called them wrinkles, I think. I can't hold on to these wrinkles.
Which is so weird because I think he was holding on to the hand.
Yeah. The hand was wrinkled?
But the iron doesn't iron the hand.
Okay. So it also doesn't make sense to you either.
Maybe it's a metaphor as well, man, you know, for the military-industrial complex.
It's because we don't get it. We're not smart enough to get it.
Yeah, it's just like writing prompt. wrinkles go? And they're like,
oh, we should make him see wrinkles as many times as possible in this episode because meta.
That's like, have you ever heard Mark Maron has a bit about that where he talks about like when he makes notes for his jokes. He's like, I have post-it notes and I'll write quickly when I'm like, it'll come to me while I'm driving and I'll just scribble it down. But then it's so short, I'll just be at home. I'll be like, oh, what's this one say? Mayonnaise. What's that mean? And I'll have to sit there for like 2 hours thinking about what's funny about mayonnaise.
I was wondering if we were gonna get like a classic Casey anecdote, which is kind of what I'm accustomed to. If you talk to Casey a while, like for long enough, he'll give you an anecdote from something. Yeah,
I'm so conscious of it now that you've pointed it out. It's terrible.
Oh, dude,
I'm like, wait, am I anecdoting?
I want a classic Casey anecdote.
You got one. You got a Mark Maron one.
You got one. Yeah.
This whole podcast is a Casey anecdote. It's the only forum where I'm useful.
Fantastic.
All right, is there anything we want to say before we go into this, the second part?
Any last questions?
Any last words? Oh, I know what we didn't cover. What does Fooly Cooly mean? Because they said it during the mega scene all the time. And then afterwards they said, what does it mean? And nobody answered. So if somebody could answer that for me, please.
I have a theory.
Okay.
Hit us with it.
Okay. So like there's the thing with the horn, right? And then there's the thing about needing to hide it. And then there's Fooly Cooly is obviously something sexual of some kind. I feel like it might have something to do with boners. No. I can tell by his reaction that's not the case.
I just love the way you put that.
Such an intellectual. I love it. It's like, well, I believe it has something to do with boners.
Mike puts on his tweed jacket with elbow patches. Something to do with boners.
Yes, quite the boners, of course. Fooly Cooly has to do with boners.
Boners. My God. Puffs on his pipe. What is your theory, Melanie, before I clear it up as best I can?
I don't know if I can top that. Because now all I have in my head is boners.
We all have boners in our head, really.
Oh, gosh. Okay, wait. No, I don't know. I also think it's something sexual, to be honest.
So that's kind of the point. Fooly Cooly is actually a nonsense word. It doesn't mean anything. There is an interview with the dude who created the show that just says, where does it come from? And the quote is, and I know because I have it right here, I got the idea from a CD in a music magazine with the title Fooly Cooly. I liked the idea of titles that are shortened long English words, like Pokemon for Pocket Monsters, for instance, and an old J-pop band called Brilliant Green that was known as Brilly Greely. He's like, it doesn't mean anything, but he uses it. The running gag in the manga sequence there is that his dad assumes that it's a sexual thing because he's a weird dude who's like ribbing his kid about having a girlfriend, basically. And he's like, this is probably a sexual thing, right? I'm so cool. And son's like, what? No, I don't know what it means. And they're constantly there like, is it this? I bet it's this. Does it work like this? No. Just back and forth, on and on. And it comes up a bunch in the series. And everyone's like, I have no idea what it means.
I love that so much.
Yeah.
But also, the only context that we had to what Fooly Cooly is what the dad was putting out. So
totally.
Yeah. Not our fault.
Makes sense.
Yeah. The only true, concrete meaning to it is that it's like fool and cool. And the whole sort of like Nauta's character is somebody who's like hiding from his emotions and trying to look so cool and ends up being a jackass the whole time.
Right. Like,
So he is Fooly Cooly. It is not truly anything, but that if it has a meaning, that is probably the closest to what it is.
I like that.
Now that we've talked about what Fooly Cooly means, what does Fooly Cooly mean to you?
Ha ha ha! Well,
it's the friends we got along the way. You know?
The true Fooly Cooly.
The true Fooly Cooly is the friends we made along the way.
Well, now all I can think about is boners. No.
I guess the boner, of course.
Boners. Fooly now Cooly. I put on my tweed jacket and instigate a manga sequence. to actually answer your question, to me, Fooly Cooly kind of has a weird and interesting sort of space in my brain, because watching this show is one of the first things I did when COVID lockdown started, because a friend of mine had suggested it to me in like high school and I just never got around to watching it. And then lockdown happened and I was like, hey, I'll do this. And so I watched an episode a day for most of a week during a particularly emotionally challenging time. And at the end, I was like, this is the coolest and most moving thing I've ever seen, you know. And it just blew my mind to pieces. And I just became really, really infatuated with it. And I spent a really long time like just reading about it, reading people's takes on it, reading about like where the director came from. He worked on Evangelion is the answer to that question.
Nice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Did he choose the ending?
He did not, but he did direct, I think, episode 24, like the remade episode 24.
Oh, okay.
But so I spent a lot of time just kind of like effectively studying this series and absorbing people's thoughts about like what it is truly about. And part of me kind of regrets doing that when I did, because a lot of people have really negative opinions about all the parts that come next, like the revival versions. And some of those negative opinions are very, very valid, but a lot of them are very not. And I kind of understand why, because like FLCL season, like series one is now, like you've seen it now, it's crazy and the animation is incredible, and at the time there wasn't anything really like that. It was kind of like it sort of inherited Cowboy Bebop's throne as like, we made something kind of normal and then stylized the shit out of it. Now it's something entirely new.
Was this pre or post Cowboy Bebop?
Post,
you know? Post. Oh really? Okay. Yeah. Interesting,
because Cowboy Bebop I think was early 90s. And then this kind of came along and did more of that. And it's like, the legend goes that the people who made Avatar The Last Airbender, or it might have been Legend of Korra, one of them, when they were discussing making this series, turned to the art directors and whatnot and were like, all of you have to go out and buy the Blu-ray of FLCL tonight and watch the entirety of it, because this is what we're going for. And you can see, if you do a side-by-side comparison, a lot of stylistic similarities. One of them doesn't have any guitars in it, but still. So I've gotten way off track. But the point is, it's very... people started comparing the second version of it to the first version of it, which isn't really fair, because the first version of it is too big of a deal.
Some things don't need to be compared for you to enjoy them.
100%. And I actually really did ultimately enjoy the second one. The third one legitimately is flawed to the point of like, unless you guys watch this and are like, I desperately need to see more, and then watch the second and go, I still need to see more, knowing that there is more. If you don't have that feeling, don't watch the third one, but do watch the second one. But so it kind of means a lot to me. It's also like, I don't know, I, to some degree, identify with Naota as, like, I had a very weird puberty, you know what I mean? And I'm like, I identify with becoming infatuated with unattainable people and all that kind of thing when I was younger and all that kind of thing. So having seen that story evolve and be reflected is really neat.
But done in a respectful way.
Done in a respectful way, and in a way that doesn't make Naota into some glorious hero.
Yeah.
You know, the point is that throughout the whole thing, he's wrong. and we're highlighting that he's wrong. You can even go further and be like, not only should he not be infatuated with Haruko, really, he shouldn't be leaning on Mamimi in the way that he does, and he should probably be paying attention to the one girl in his class who does show interest in him and who's a perfectly normal and well-adjusted person.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. But, yeah, so there's... You can kind of talk about it all day long, and that's also something I like about it. It's very challenging in that respect.
Yeah, I could totally see, like I do feel like there are shows that bring us through this pandemic that will probably give us a lasting impact,
mm-hmm.
potentially. I mean, I'm only because we're not out of it yet, so I can't say for certain, but yeah. I could see why that would have an effect on you for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you guys feel about it?
I think I've been pretty straightforward with my... how I felt about it. It was crap. No, I'm kidding. I loved it. I loved every second of it. This was great. I loved how confused I got. I'm glad we got there together. This was really cool. Super interesting to watch. I love the animation style. Is this the right word? Titillating? It's titillating, you know? Like, I want to see more of this. Absolutely. I want more. Mike, you go ahead.
I'll give it 10 boners out of 10.
All I can think about are boners. Okay, great. So you liked it?
Yes.
Okay, great.
No, they're rage boners.
They're rage boners.
Yes, I very much liked it. Quite excessively. Every moment was fantastic. Like I said, the music... I've never been attached to a score as much as this show. Well, is that true? It's definitely true for an anime. It's probably true for most TV shows. The Mandalorian's like got an amazing score, but like this for me is like one of the best. It was a really cool score. I really like that. And then just the animation and just the craziness and the weirdness I love too. I'm just in love with it. So
I'm so excited. I did it. I picked a good one.
I guess I'll review too. I'm going to give it 10 chopsticks that prevent Alzheimer's out of 10. very, and like the pair, 10 pairs of that.
Oh, wow.
So kind of 20.
Kind of 20, so, yeah.
Because fuck sporks. Fuck sporks.
Fuck sporks.
Sporks. I said sports for a while, but I mean that too.
I thought you might have, and I was like, she knows what she's about.
I can hate two things.
I have layers.
Yeah.
I contain multitudes.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah. No, that was really rad. Thank you so much for showing that to me.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to show it to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So for you, for this episode. Specifically for this episode, not the series as a whole, what would you rate this episode?
Oh, definitely 10 TV-headed robots for sure.
Oof.
Yeah.
99.
Chili and fries. No. Yeah, I just think it's dope. I just think it's dope front to back and top to bottom and pretty well everything about it. And you should definitely watch more of it because you can watch a whole season in 2 hours.
Well, guess what? That's the next question. Mike, what do you think?
So I have a Funimation subscription that is lapsing soon. So I will definitely watch this in the next week before that ends.
I cannot stress this enough. Do not watch a whole season in one day.
Okay.
It'll do things to you.
It really will. I binged seasons 2 and 3. And there was a point where I was just sitting there staring at the screen like, this could be anything. I could be watching static right now. I literally just stopped and went to bed. I was like, I'm no longer absorbing information.
Good advice.
Yeah.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'd watch the shit out of this, so.
Please do, and then let me know what you think of the rest of it. I'm infinitely curious.
I think this might be the first time that we've ever got, like, a perfect 10 on something.
Ooh.
Because there was, like, maybe once or twice that we got a couple 10s, but then our guest was like, it's not that good.
Like, this is shit.
Calm down. Yeah.
That's amazing. I can't imagine bringing something to the show that you don't think is great.
Well, specifically...
I fully really agonized over picking a show that I knew to have a good final episode that was like representative of the series as a whole.
Well, you did great picking. Well,
thank you.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
Yeah. And then check out your podcast, which is called, what do you call it?
What is it called?
Tales from the Lost Galaxy.
Nice.
There's like crickets, a look of confusion. Cool. Tales. Might change that bad boy.
Tales of the Lost Galaxy.
Tales from the Lost Galaxy.
Oh, sorry. Tales from the Lost Galaxy.
Right? I didn't make that up, did I? Okay, I have to check now.
Coming soon to podcasts near you.
Dessert Before Breakfast is hosted by Mike Dorval and Melanie Germain. Editing by me, Callan Dorval. Music by The Brass Action. Send us a voice message by using the link in the description or email us at dessertbeforebreakfast@gmail.com.